Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, Americans are heading to the polls today in what promises to be an historic and defining election as they choose who will be the 47th President of the United States. Kamala Harris and Donald Trump made their final appeals in the hours before Election Day, when voters will either back America's first female president or herald an unprecedented political comeback with far-reaching implications for America's allies. Let's hear some of their final remarks.
America is ready for a fresh start, ready for a new way forward where we see our fellow American not as an enemy, but as a neighbor. And we are ready for a president who knows that the true measure of a leader is not based on who you beat down, but based on who you lift up.
If we win Michigan, we win the whole thing, the whole thing. Over the past 4 years, Kamala has orchestrated the most egregious betrayal that any leader in American history has ever inflicted on our people. She was given the authority to run the border by Sleepy Joe because he wanted to go to bed and he wanted to sleep. He had only one thing he wanted to do, and that's sleep.
Well, we heard the Democratic vice president speaking at her final rally in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, followed by the Republican former president speaking in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And joining me now from there is our reporter, Una Kelly, who was at that rally, which only finished in the last few hours. So, Una, tell us, what was Donald Trump's final rally of the 2024 campaign like?
Well, Claire, it's preaching to the true believers, isn't it? You know, repeating the same key messages of America is broken and Trump will fix it. There was some of the rambling that we've come to expect from Trump at these rallies and listing of grievances, but his supporters absolutely love it because they know exactly what they're getting with him. Now, it has become a tradition for Trump to finish a campaign in Michigan. He closed his campaign here in Grand Rapids in 2016 and in 2020, so was back here again for a third time, which really does give you a sense of how high a prize Michigan is in the path to the presidency. Trump took it from the Democrats in 2016, but in 2020, the state flipped back to Biden. Now, outside the sports arena in Grand Rapids, supporters were queuing for hours to get in, so it was a sea of red MAGA hats everywhere that you looked. Now, when we got into the arena, there were some empty seats around me up in the top tier of the arena, but you know, there was a crowd of many thousands who were there. And it was a really late rally as well. Trump was due to appear at 10:30 p.m., but he arrived late from a rally in Pennsylvania and was on stage just after midnight. Now, in terms of the warm-up acts, this rally didn't draw any celebrities. Kamala Harris had Katy Perry and Lady Gaga, who were warming up for her in Pennsylvania last night. Trump supporters, on the other hand, were delivered a lineup of Republican congressmen and some mayors. But in comparison to the Harris rally, it really felt more theatrical to me. The supporters kind of are the show with this kind of thing. When you were walking in and talking to them and just observing all of it, some of them really go big on the costumes that they're wearing to it and the t-shirt slogans that they have. I spotted one man and his t-shirt was saying, "Trump 2020, the sequel, make liberals cry again." And then the slogans around the arena when you're in there would say things like, "November 5th, the most important day in the history of our country. Trump will fix it. Make America healthy again." So repeating those key themes. And then the supporters themselves, they were doing Mexican waves and they had these machines that were shooting t-shirts out of them. They were dancing to the music. They were playing Pitbull's song Timber, It's a Man's World. And they also used Sinead O'Connor's song Nothing Compares to You. So the people there were really in great form. They were excited to see the man that they believe is going to save their country. I was asking some of them why they made the effort to come out to the rally.
We want to save our country, so of course we want to come out here and show support for Donald Trump.
What do you think the problems are with America at the moment?
There are too many to mention.
We want a secure society. Absolutely. We are concerned about our border. We want people to immigrate to our country legally. We want them to have the best possible chance at the American dream, but we want them here legally.
I think it's important to practice our freedom of speech, and I feel like Donald Trump's our best candidate to express that. He stands behind the Americans and what they believe in, and we're proud to stand here and represent him.
I support Trump. I support Trump, and I believe in all his policies. He's going to close the border. That's what we need to stop this. It's not an open border. It needs to be closed. That's my number one reason.
It's historical. It's historical. That's why I'm come. I love Trump.
Why?
We were making comments in there.
You like his policies?
Yeah, policies. Good man. Good man. He's going to cut taxes on certain things like overtime and the Social Security and people border that tips. Control. Tips won't be taxed and all that.
The last rally I was at was January 6th.
Oh, you went there?
Yes.
You went to the Capitol?
Yes, I even got my souvenir from that time period here, 2020.
What happened that day?
It was a very family-oriented rally to begin with, and the jury's still out on what all happened later on that day.
He's a great leader. He's going to do great things for this country.
What kind of stuff does he say that you like?
Freedom. Less government.
You think you don't have freedom?
I think that there's people that want to take a lot of my freedoms away.
We support Trump, and we just love him and love our country.
Well, our country is in trouble, and we...
In what way?
Too many immigrants coming across the border, the economy sucks, and you can go on and on. Just the general movement of so many things.
What does Trump say that you like?
That's easy. Fight, fight, fight.
Fight, fight, fight. Really strong words there from just one of Trump's supporters. So, Una, when he finally took to the stage, when Donald Trump arrived out, what points did he open with?
Well, he came out on the stage, Claire, just after midnight to deafening cheers. And he told supporters, we're way ahead, but pretend we're tied or going to lose. So people need to get out and vote. He said that they'll win and said that it will be the single greatest victory, politically speaking, in the history of the country. And he then said, let me begin by asking you one question. Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? There, of course, then are loud shouts of no from the crowd. And that's a key theme I've picked up on the ground here in Michigan from Trump supporters, because rightly or wrongly, they blame the Democratic administration for a higher cost of living. They keep talking about how expensive groceries and petrol are for them now. Trump then had this line, there is true economic anguish at home and war and chaos abroad. And to me, that felt like that was really the crafted message coming from his campaign that distills the message they want to get across. But after that, there kind of was a sense that Trump had got those messages that he was supposed to say out of the way, and it then quickly became what his rallies are known for. It sounded more like a stream of consciousness that was kind of difficult to follow. At one point, he did say to the crowd, don't you like a president who doesn't have to use a teleprompter? And that drew a lot of laughs from the crowd around me because they do actually find him really funny. But then certain buzzwords he would use would elicit loud boos from the crowd. Anytime Kamala Harris was mentioned, there were boos, or Nancy Pelosi. But the loudest boos were when Trump mentioned anything to do with transgender people. Now, Kamala Harris, in the final days of her campaign, has focused on optimism, and she hasn't directly mentioned her opponent in the past few days. Trump, on the other hand, constantly calls Harris a very low-Q individual, and he leans back on listing old grievances against people like Nancy Pelosi, people who tried to impeach him, and he brought back the old classic, Crooked Hillary, as well.
So, Una, towards the end of the event, then he was joined by some of his children, which is interesting in and of itself because not all of them were there. And then he ended the rally saying that he's going to fire Kamala Harris and he's going to cut taxes.
Yeah, Claire, he was joined on stage around 2 a.m. by some of his children, Eric, Tiffany and Donald Jr. Now, his elder daughter, Ivanka, hasn't featured in this campaign and his wife, Melania, has only featured sometimes. But three of his children were there and they spoke about how proud they were of him. And then at the end, Trump came back on stage and he delivered his kind of closing thoughts, which were, we're going to fire Kamala, we're going to cut taxes. And he then also introduced this idea that they were going to tell Mexico that they're killing people by allowing fentanyl into the US. And he said that he'll introduce tariffs on Mexico if they don't stop drugs coming over the border. So those were his closing thoughts. And he then danced off stage around 2:15 in the morning to the tune of YMCA. And Claire, when it comes to what happens over the coming days now, something that Trump references frequently is this idea that the election was stolen from him last time. And this is something that many, certainly not all, but many of his supporters do believe. I asked some of them, if Kamala Harris is announced as the winner of this election, would they believe it and accept it?
No, there'll be cheating. There's definitely going to be cheating by the Democrats, absolutely. Maybe not overwhelmingly, but they will cheat.
If Harris is announced as the winner, will you believe that?
We'll have to deal with it. I mean, we've dealt with it with Obama and Biden, so.
It's America. That's what we do. We'll live to fight another day.
Yes. Oh, yeah. 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 We'll have to accept it and fight next time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I feel like you have to as an American citizen.
If Harris wins, if she's announced as the winner, will you believe that?
I'm not sure how to comment on that.
Do you think that voting fraud is happening at the moment?
Absolutely. Yes.
Some Donald Trump supporters at his final rally in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Una Kelly, thank you for joining us and bringing us that report. And you can hear more from Una right throughout the day on RT Radio 1 as America goes to vote. Let's get more now from law lecturer at University of Galway, Larry Donnelly, and also Jennifer Ewing from Republicans Overseas. So, Larry, as voters go to the polls today, and we know that over 70 million people had voted in advance of today, but this is it. We're reaching the end game here. How do you define this very unusual campaign?
Yes, Claire. I mean, unprecedented is an overused word, but it certainly is fitting for this campaign. What a long and strange trip this has been at many levels. Assassination attempts, the very late withdrawal of Joe Biden from the race, a topsy-turvy fight from start to finish. And look, if I'm to gauge where we're at today, my own sense is that based on a whole host of reasons that Kamala Harris and Tim Walz have the momentum right now, the question is whether that will be enough to take them over the top. Because as Una's interviews revealed, Trump enjoys very strong advantages on immigration and inflation, which are the two biggest issues in this election. He also has an inbuilt advantage with the Electoral College system. And I also think he's done a good job at painting Harris as too far left for middle America. Now, that momentum, I think, is pretty clear. I think it's pretty much trending for Harris and Walz at the moment. The question becomes, will it be enough to overcome some of the advantages and strengths of Donald Trump that I just mentioned?
Okay, well, Jennifer, let's come to you on that. And you heard what Larry says, that he feels the momentum is with Kamala Harris, but will it be enough to take her over the line? How are you and your colleagues in the Republicans feeling about Donald Trump's chances today?
Sure. Hi, Claire. Hi, Larry. Great use of the Grateful Dead quote, long, strange trip it's been, by the way. And it has. I agree with so much of what Larry just said. With one exception, I think the momentum is in Trump and J.D. Vance's favor. And the reason is because what we're looking for are what's called the low propensity voters, the people who usually don't vote in elections because they just, you know, can't be bothered because they, you know, don't like either candidate. And what Trump and Vance have done recently is get out and talk to these, you know, whether it be on the Joe Rogan podcast. You'll see both J.D. Vance and Trump have been on that. Rogan came out and actually endorsed Trump last night. And I think that means something. In addition, we've got the momentum of, you know, some former Democrats, whether it's Tulsi Gabbard, whether it's Bobby Kennedy Jr. And there's just been a real realignment of the Republican Party. It's no longer the party of forever wars, the party of the sort of, you know, uniparty. It is definitely America first, looking a little more inward. As Larry mentioned, the two biggest issues are, you know, definitely inflation and the economy, and then, of course, the crisis at the southern border. And the issue set is in Trump's favor.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it interesting, though, Jennifer, that you're up against a candidate who was selected at the 11th hour, something that has never happened before, and a candidate who has a track record of serving with an unpopular president, with President Joe Biden, and yet Donald Trump has never managed to open up a significant lead over Kamala Harris. How do you explain that?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And, you know, if you look at Trump in the past, he never really got past 50% with approval. Right. So I think if the Democrats had actually had a primary and chosen a viable, good candidate, which they do have a great bench, that they'd be way ahead in this. Donald Trump, great as he is, I voted for him already. But, you know, he's a flawed candidate in many ways. And I think you will find that while people are voting for Trump, what people are doing on the Kamala Harris Democrat side is more voting against Donald Trump. And that's not the same thing. And I'm not sure that's enough to get them over the edge. And, mm-hmm. and certainly her choice of Tim Walz was a mistake. I mean, she could have chosen a very popular governor of Pennsylvania, a swing state, Josh Shapiro, you know, 60% approval rate, and yet she did not. So she chose a weak candidate, and that will hurt her.
Okay, so Larry, where do you stand on that? That they're the mistakes that the Democrats made, not having a proper convention after Joe Biden decided to step down, and perhaps the wrong choice for vice president?
I tend to agree with both of those comments. I would have picked Shapiro were I Harris. And there's no question in my mind that if there had been a competitive process, that Harris would not be the nominee. That all having been said, and I always say to people not to make too much of any single poll, but a very, very interesting poll from Iowa by the most reputable pollster in the state suggests that actually Harris is in the lead there. Now, I'm not so sure she's going to win the state of Iowa, but what's more important is to drill into some of the figures in that poll. And it kind of rebuts some of what Jennifer said, in the sense that women in particular are voting for Harris in huge numbers, absolutely huge numbers. And if we can if there is even a kernel of truth to that poll, then it puts Harris in very, very good position to win this thing. I think that's largely down to the reversal of Roe versus Wade and anger among American women about that. But I think it's broader than that. I think it is a sense that among women and among others, that it's not really ideological. It's just we don't want the chaos, the circus sideshow anymore. And that's what I think is behind the momentum over the past few days. And yeah, maybe some of it's just purely anti-Trump, but I think some of it is also pro-Harris.
Yeah, there was a podcast I was listening to yesterday analysing the impact, Jennifer, of the Madison Square Garden Trump homecoming event. And the suggestion was that cut through with people more than anything else. Some of the distasteful comments that were made by the comedian, I mean, it has been widely reported and rehearsed and analysed since. Do you agree with that, though, that more than anything else that has happened over the course of that campaign, this event in Madison Square Gardens has hit home with people who maybe were undecided about Donald Trump and maybe they didn't like what they saw around him?
No, I think this, let's keep in mind that Tony Hinchcliffe is what's called a roast comedian. So he's trying to shock people. Was he a good choice for your sort of one of your closing rallies? Absolutely not. He was not a good choice. His joke wasn't funny. But this idea that Puerto Ricans are going to change their vote because of some of his comment is, quite frankly, it's insulting to Puerto Ricans, you know, who are probably voting on, you know, the price of gas and groceries and the crisis at the southern border, not some off-color joke. And, you know, this whole thing about, oh, Trump was stirring up racism with this MSG convention is really interesting, because we're actually seeing both Latinos and Black men move towards Trump in droves. And those are two identity groups, shall we say, that the Democrats have to win in large numbers or their coalition falls apart. So, no, I think Harris calling, Trump a fascist, and, Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan saying, oh, you're anti-American if you vote for Trump. And, of course, Biden's gaffe, if we're being generous, of calling Trump voters garbage. It's not effective. And that probably is why you saw in her closing speeches a little more positive and trying to unify the country, because this name calling of the voters, not even just the candidate, but of the voters, half the country, is ineffective.
Yeah, well, we know she has not mentioned Donald Trump's name in the closing days. And we heard the clip of her there earlier, saying we need to lift people up rather than push people down. Larry, is that an admission from the Democrats that strategy of calling out Trump wasn't working?
Well, I think it's a balance. I mean, I think obviously, highlighting Donald Trump's flaws is hugely important. But the two most powerful emotions in politics are hope and fear. And Trump obviously is a master of exploiting fear. What I think Harris is trying to do in the closing days is to appeal to people's better side, to people's better emotions, much as Barack Obama did to such great effect. And I will say, just in terms of the rally, I take Jennifer's point that it mightn't move huge numbers of Puerto Ricans or Latinos or African Americans. It might move some, which could be decisive. But where I think the effect is probably felt more broadly is that cohort of white suburban women who are going to be hugely important in this election, and who I think saw what happened on that stage in Madison Square Garden and were absolutely repulsed by it. And again, this is some of the issues with Trump is sometimes he can't get out of his own way. He has great strengths as a politician. But whoever in the campaign, whether it was authorized from the top or whoever it was, who thought that would be a good idea to have a comedian like that say those stupid things, should be fired.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to leave it there. Lots to come over the course of the day. Jennifer Ewing and Larry Donnelly, thank you very much. And tonight at 10 o'clock on RT Radio 1, there's going to be an extended late debate until 1 o'clock in the morning. Colm O'Mungon will be talking to reporters from right across America on the very latest developments in their states. Coming up here, though, it's almost showtime. We're going to have the latest from the final days of the 33rd Dáil.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.